Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, Tune In and Listen, a conference here in the Vatican looks at the identity and mission of Catholic radio stations around the world. And a new leader for the church in the land where Jesus lived. Latin Patriarch Michel Sabah hands over to his successor, Bishop Fouad Toual. Stay tuned.
Welcome and listen in to a radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio.
Your good old-fashioned radio on. Or maybe these days you listen through the internet or prefer to download your favourite programmes on your iPod. But whatever method you choose to listen, I wonder what kind of content you'd be hoping to hear on a Catholic radio station. That question is at the heart of a conference taking place here in the Vatican this week as heads of Catholic radio stations from around the globe gather for a conference focused on better defining their identity and mission in today's high-tech society. The Vatican's own Council for Social Communications, headed by Archbishop Claudio Celi, has organised the three-day meeting, which opened on Thursday at the Pontifical Urbanianum University. Participants will focus on the very different cultural contexts in which radio stations are working on the different continents and how they can make better use of new technologies to promote basic Christian values and viewpoints.
Turn your radio on.
One aim of Catholic radio is, of course, to present the good news of Jesus Christ, of his love for all human beings. Another is to defend the worth and value of human people in different situations, and then to celebrate human achievement in culture, art, music, literature.
Monsignor Paul Tai is Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications.
I think this is a meeting that we've decided to have to gather as many people as possible. And the first thing to underline is the fact that we've had a very positive response. We've over 100 people coming from 50 different countries representing 60 to 70 different radio stations. And our primary interest is listening to their experience of what it is to be a Catholic radio station in their own countries, in the particular economic, political, regulatory environments in which they work, demographic situations in which they work, to look and see, is there something specific that characterises a Catholic radio station independent of the particular context in which it works? We don't have a one-size-fits-all model ready to give to the people who come here, but it's enabled them to talk about their own experience of being Catholic radio stations, what their priorities are, how they understand their own identity and mission as Catholic radio stations in their own specific context, and then to see if working together, and a lot of this Congress is about the people working in groups, reflecting on small inputs that have been given by different participants, in order to formulate, if at all possible, an overview of what it means to be a Catholic radio station in the present situation.
Now, it was only a few years ago we were hearing that radio was really on the way out with the advent of web technology, mobile phone technology, all these things that were supposed to replace radio. What do you see as really the role of a Catholic radio in our very high-tech era?
I think there's two issues there. There's one about radio in general, and then there's something about Catholic radio in particular. I think radio has survived, and in funny ways, radio has maybe become more powerful through internet and podcasting. So I can now sit in the breakfast and listen to RTE from Dublin in a way that I couldn't have done before. And it means that radio now, I suppose the part of the thing of radio per se is radio involves us listening. We can often do other things at the same time. And I think that's a key to radio. It allows you to have it there as the background. And that's why there's something about radio that maybe will always is going to survive. Catholic radio then in particular, I think, has the potential there that Catholic radio stations are now recognising that the new technologies, where they're available, and this is one of the things we're going to look at and see that in some parts of the world the new technologies are not terribly available and it's back down to using traditional forms of radio broadcasting. But one of the things that's about it, there is something of immediacy of the word to the person who is listening. I think Catholic radio stations then in particular have that possibility of being quite local, and yet the new technologies allow them then to be universal and global at the same time, so they can broadcast to a local community, and a member of that community in another part of the world potentially could be listening to it on internet. So I think one of the things that the radio can do is it can create community, a sense of belonging. People have their programs that they listen to. And one of the things, I suppose, for Catholic radio is to have a sense of who are our audiences. At the same time, you may want to speak to your own natural audience, your believers, people who want to hear news about the church and things that are happening locally. Equally, you're listening to, there are people listening to who don't share your faith, who you're not trying to proselytize, but you are equally trying to speak, form their understanding of the church by what they hear from you. So I think one of the things that's going to emerge on this very strongly is we're asking people to reflect a little bit on who's listening, what are they hearing, to whom are we communicating? And I suppose my own background in communications, I've always been very interested. One thing is, what am I saying? The other thing, what is the other person hearing? And what are the filters through which we're working? And as radio, often the local broadcast will also be heard and picked up on in another world. It means we have to be reflecting all the time on how different people are going to hear what we're saying.
These questions about audience are very difficult, because while you can monitor hits onto a website, it's very hard to monitor exactly who's listening to your radio programmes, isn't it?
It's extraordinarily difficult. I think in some local context, there is an immediacy to it. And one of the things I was quite taken by is listening to, we had Ned Limina visit here from the bishops of Haiti. It's very clear there, obviously in a culture where the spoken word is particularly important, but that because their radio station is transmitted then locally, they have a very strong sense of reaction. And I think local radio will often have that. They'll get immediacy. There can be, from what I've seen of some of the Catholic radio stations, audience participation is an important part of it, and you get an idea of who's listening. I think for people who are working on a broader scale, you're broadcasting out into the dark. You don't know where your words are going. You don't know what context they're picked up in. But I think anybody who's worked in any form of communication will have had the experience of hearing stuff that they've said come back to them or being reflected on. You realise, yeah, there is an importance there. I think one of the interventions that I was, Father Kuprowski uses this very nice image where he talks about the difference between biblical time and media time. In media time, we're trying to assess audiences and what they're reacting and what they're doing. And his notion of biblical time, where we're sowing a seed, we're throwing it out there, we're scattering it, we don't know where it's going. And yet we're trusting that something can resonate. And I suppose insofar as Catholic radio is going to be rooted in the word of the gospel, I think that word will always have the capacity to resonate with the human heart. And that's partly what gives us a certain confidence in the value and worth of what we're doing.
You mentioned, though, that many of these radios will be in countries where Catholics, Christians are not the majority at all, maybe a very small minority in, for example, an Islamic country or in other parts of the world. And you said it's important not to be proselytizing. This is a tricky situation, a delicate situation, isn't it, for the radios?
It's a very delicate, because I think it's very clear from what I've seen so far that none of the radio stations are in the business of proselytizing. Yet there may be others who do see the very fact that they're broadcasting a Christian message as a form of proselytization. So therefore we can't say we're not going to speak our truth, we're not going to speak of Jesus Christ, we're not going to do that in a way that is inclusive of others. And yet there are situations in which maybe there are people who would not wish to have any presence of the Christian word or the Christian gospel being broadcast. So obviously when I say that we're not in the business of proselytization, that's in accordance with our definition of proselytization, but neither are we going to be in the business of denying the truths that are important to us. And that's why one of the things is very important is we're here in Rome, we're at a certain remove and distance from many of these more difficult situations. Why in the first session in particular of our conference, we're inviting people from different realities to speak to us about their realities and to tell us about the challenges that they find. And they vary enormously. So you have a situation, say, we have people from the United States where there's an extraordinary range of radio available. How do you work out a niche for yourself there? We have people coming from Asia, where Radio Veritas Asia service is broadcasting across an extraordinary range of countries, where they're trying to obviously meet their own believers and have something to say for them, and yet be conscious that there's a potential there of saying something that's important for society as a whole. So a lot of it will be about listening, and then together trying to see where maybe we may can support and help one another with suggestions as to how they can, we can best work in these environments.
Radio can also play a crucial role, can't it, if you take countries in conflict or even post-conflict situations and the particularly delicate role that it can play there in trying to bring society back together again to promote reconciliation.
Yeah, it's one of the real challenges is, I suppose, I come from Ireland, we've been through a process there, and one of the things that my Archbishop Dermot Martin has always said is the good politician rises above the tribe and can bring people to a better vision. I think the good communicator, and particularly the good Catholic communicator, will have to be able to rise above the tribal, not get trapped into one side of situations of conflict. We've had very eloquent testimonies. I was talking to somebody who worked in Burkina Faso at a time of real conflict there, where, as the priest director of a small local radio station, he went on air and tried to talk people into a more peaceful state of mind for about 2 to 3 hours, conscious that there were people outside his radio station who would have been quite happy to come in and put him off air because he was not going with the message of the day. I think this is, above all, it's about recognising the heroics of people who have been able to speak for peace, who've been able to be the word of reason at times when reason is in short supply, and to support and acknowledge that and hold that as an example for all, so that we navigate by what is best rather than by what is maybe being trapped by failures that have happened in particular situations.
Certainly we've seen situations where radio has helped to inflame the conflict. We think of Rwanda, for example, and these are very dangerous situations, aren't they?
There are always dangers in situations of civil strife that we side with one or the other, and we maybe unwittingly inflame a situation. But I think it's hugely important, above all, that we see the potential that our gospel is a gospel of peace and justice. It's a gospel that speaks of the dignity and worth of every human person, not just of those who share our views or our ideologies or our tribal affiliations. And it's hugely important that we have this sense of the civil responsibility of radios. That's why one of our sessions is going to look at the whole thing of Catholic radio in the civil sphere and the importance of recognising why there may be need for regulation of radio in areas, even though at times people would like to have a free hand to do what they like, that we have to be conscious of the responsibilities there to ensure that radio always is working for the common good of society in general.
You're talking about Catholic mission and identity, and yet, of course, there are many voices within the Catholic world too. How much do you think radio should be perhaps a vehicle for letting these voices come through?
I think we're talking about Catholic mission and identity. One of the things, if certainly, that would emerge very strongly is that we're starting from the bottom up. We're asking the people who come to tell us what they think it means to be a Catholic radio station, what it means in different situations to be a Catholic radio station. And from that, we then begin to work towards an understanding of what the parameters are. I mean, I think radio has an enormous capacity to allow for debate and dialogue and discussion. And I think in many ways Catholic radio can contribute to that ongoing debate that there is within the Church around so many different issues.
And my thanks there to Monsignor Paul Tai, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. Oh, over to the Holy Land now, where the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Michel Sabah, this weekend hands over to his successor, Bishop Fouad Toile, who has been serving as his auxiliary in Jerusalem for the last 2.5 years. For the past 2 decades, Patriarch Sabah has headed the church there, which includes Catholics in Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories. Bishop Toile, his successor, trained in Vatican diplomacy at the Pontifical Ecclesiastical Academy and served in Honduras, Egypt, Germany and Peru before being appointed Bishop of Tunis in 1992. He spent 13 years there before being named as coadjutor or assistant bishop to Jerusalem and his native Jordan.
Jerusalem, for me personally, is the city where the Lord walked and suffered and died. And we cannot work in the Holy Land. We cannot love the Holy Land without this mystery of cross.
Faced with continuing violence in the region and a steady exodus of Christians from the Middle East, Bishop Toile sees the church playing a key role in bringing hope and a vision of peace and reconciliation between Christians, Muslims and Jews. During his most recent visit here to the Vatican, Bishop Toile sat down with me to discuss the challenges facing his church and renewed international efforts at finding a lasting peace for the region.
Well, according to the position of the Holy Father, we still have hope, and he invites us to have always hope, and we do. Till now, there is not many change in the local level, or the local situation, but at least on the international level, there is awareness about the importance of the situation, the importance of a solution to be given to the Holy Land. We are very grateful for all the visits, the pilgrimage coming to the Holy Land. With their presence, these bishops, we had a pilgrimage of all bishop conference of Germany, of Austria and many others. It gives us the impression that we are not alone in this mission. We are not forgotten. We are not abandoned, thanks God. It means this strong communion with the universal church, with our church sister all in Europe. We receive many helps, many helps. We are grateful. But in the same time, we say we need something more. What we need is a peace. We don't want to survive only, to be beggars with license. Church bigger, begging all the time with license. I don't like this. It is a kind of humiliation. What we need for the moment is a political horizon. We need timing. We need to know where we are going. Time to finish the wall, time to finish the checkpoint, time to start the Palestinian state, time to finish with our problems with the visa. As you know, the Latin Patriarchate covers Jordan, Palestine and Israel. The majority of our priests, nuns, schools, families are in Jordan, which means we need this link to Jordan. We need to move with the freedom, with liberty for pastoral work. I don't speak about politics. I leave politics to politicians. But as bishop, we want to move for our pastoral work, and we are handicapped. Handicapped because Israel, till now, doesn't trust everything. Israel follows a politic of fears. And fear is not the best thing to live and to share and so on. So we hope with the intervention, with the prayer, with the pressure of this international coordination that we had, we hope that with our contact with Israel, there will be more trust between both, so we can do our mission as church in the Holy Land, give to the Holy Land its holiness, and remember that Holy Land is at its whole world dimension, and we are aware of that, and we want to have all the people freedom to access to the holy places, freedom for the local people, for our Christians, from Bethlehem, from Ramallah, from Galilee, from Jordan, to visit freely the holy city, the holy sites. still now we're having this grace, this benediction, this joy.
We try to help this minority so that they're able to remain, that they don't have to leave, they don't have to migrate.
Cardinal John Foley heads the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem, an organisation founded at the time of the Crusades to protect pilgrims travelling to the holy sites. Today, the order supports the Christian minority in the Holy Land, funding health and educational projects in particular. Just before he left for Jerusalem, I asked Cardinal Foley what message he had for the new Latin Patriarch, Fuad.
Well, first of all, a message of gratitude to his predecessor, the Patriarch Michel Saba, who has done a wonderful job for more than two decades in leading the Christian community in Israel, in the Palestinian territories, in Jordan, and in Cyprus. And also a message of welcome and the promise of prayer and even financial support for the new patriarch, Fuad Twal, who is a native of Jordan, and the promise of our solidarity with him, our help for him, and particularly our prayers for peace in an area tragically torn by violence. Jesus came as the Prince of Peace, and I would hope that through the influence of Christians, the Christian schools which accept Muslims and Druze and the Jews, if they wish to attend, that this presence of an open Christian educational system in the Middle East, in the Holy Land, the land made sacred by Jesus, might be able to contribute to understanding and mutual respect and eventual peace in that country tragically torn by violence.
You're at the head of this very ancient organization dedicated to supporting the Christian presence there in the Holy Land. Just tell us a little bit about some of the projects that you're involved in, your organization is working on today.
Well, one of the things that I will be visiting when I'm in the Holy Land for the farewell of Patriarch Saba and for the installation of Patriarch Twal will be a visit to a hospital in Jerusalem, which has been partially financed by the Knights and Ladies of the Holy Sepulchre from around the world to the tune of about $2.25 million. So that's significant. I'll be visiting there and offering Mass there. And also, of course, we help support the Bethlehem University, which is the only Catholic university in that area. And we support several dozen Catholic schools and parishes and social institutions. So millions of dollars a year to help the Christian community, which of course is a minority within a minority in Israel twice, because a minority in a Jewish state, in the Palestinian minority in the Jewish state, and then a minority in the Palestinian territories, which are overwhelmingly Muslim, a minority in Jordan, a minority in Cyprus, which is overwhelmingly Orthodox. So we try to help this minority so that they're able to remain, that they don't have to leave, they don't have to migrate. So many of them are doing so. And I would hope that through their example, their dedication, that more people may be moved to understanding and dialogue, mutual respect and peace.
But what are the realistic hopes for peace in the region today, following President George Bush's visit to Israel earlier this year and renewed dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians? Bishop Fuad Twal again.
We are very grateful to Mr. Bush for his visit. We are grateful to the speech of Olmert at the same time. For the first time, President Bush pronounced the word occupation. They never used to use this word. He said, end of the occupation. Even Olmert that we met last time, he said he wants to find a solution within the 2008, between the promises, the good speech, the words, and the reality, daily reality we live on the ground, there is a big gap. We're looking, considering the actual situation, the cities of Palestine separated one from the other, from I don't see how they can do it this year. But it is already agreed that even Olmert and even Bush, they spoke about a solution. They put together Palestinians and Israelis. That's great. That's great. Thanks God. We encourage them. We pray for them. We respect their decisions. But we know, and they know, that from many sides we have obstacles. Obstacles from the Palestinian side, obstacles from the Israeli side, and worse than before. And I think some obstacles in the American side. I don't think that the opposition America want to give this great gift to Bush before he finishes his mandate to enter in the history, giving peace in the Holy Land, when the situation in Iraq is still the same. So we have opposition from three sides. But we Christians, we never lose hope, and we still living with dynamism, with optimism, with joy to live, to work, to do our work. We are not desperate, and never be desperate. We have many, many good signs in the Holy Land that gives us this joy to live, to work. We have our seminary full of seminarians. We have many pilgrims. We have many friends. We are not alone. Thanks God.
Looking on the Palestinian side, of course, the problems between Hamas and Fatah, many people see this as a crucial stumbling block to negotiations with Israel. Do you agree with that? And how do you think perhaps you can help to resolve these internal problems?
No. Look, now in all the Middle East, and especially in Palestine, we are living this big crisis. So within this big crisis, we have small crisis. We must understand that. I don't think that it's the moment to put them together, the two divisions from the Palestinian. Not the moment. Otherwise, that will be a pretext for Israel. We don't deal with terrorists. Now Israel has no more pretext. But for the moment, it is not the time to put them together. But I am sure, one day they must gather. And we have to remember that all the Arab League is behind pushing both of them together, and one day they will gather. They are Palestinians, they are Muslims, they are Arabs, they have all the elements to be together. Now the situation is very complicated, and we will have small problems here and there. But I hope we are happy to see both now Israelis and Palestinians are gathering to dialogue to find a solution. You have to remember, and let Israel remember, for whom we wish peace and security, that they tried all the means. Till now they won all the wars, or almost all the wars, with their neighbors. Till now they never won peace and security. Let us try something else. Let us try dialogue. Let us try trust, more trust. Let us try to respect the international resolution. Let us do something else. And we hope that everybody will enjoy and peace and security.
And my thanks there to Bishop Fouad Twal, who takes over on Sunday as the new head of the Latin Patriarchate in Jerusalem. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.